Season 4, Episode 14, A Remington Original. It opens up on a junkyard where Simone and Sipowitz are investigating a drop where a naked female body was left in the trunk of a car. And she's naked, but in that convenient pose that covers up everything so it could be on television. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be sexy because it's a dead body, but it's still convenient for...
I mean, it's still kind... I mean, titty's a titty, Kurt.
Yeah, even on a dead person?
Titty's a titty. If it wasn't... Here's a question you have to ask yourself. If it wasn't sexy, then why even show it?
I think it was to show the brutality of the crime.
I mean, they weren't really focusing on the brutality of it. You know what I mean?
Well, they did mention there are ligature marks and burns from wax.
I love this show, but they mentioned... That's like ligature marks are mentioned like once every like third episode.
Well, it's obviously a favorite word amongst the writers.
If it wasn't something that made men get boners, they wouldn't put it on TV. Anyways.
The gentleman who owns the junkyard is the one who found the body, and when they go to ask him about it, he says, "I didn't find the body. The moose found the body," referring to his dog.
Yeah.
It was a pretty cool looking dog. He has bandages around his the midsection.
Which, do dogs need bandages like that?
Well, he does have bruises.
I feel like that was just like a waste of time. I feel like he just did that at his home. He didn't go, like, to the vet.
But he said that the vet said he definitely has bruised ribs.
If a vet shouldn't be proud of that work, then.
because that you don't think it's doing anything?
Yeah, like, it didn't look tight enough. Like, it wasn't there, like... It looked like it was just wrapped around this dog really quickly. Just didn't look good.
You're going to comment on the shoddy workmanship of a vet?
whatever.
He keeps referring to the dog as if it's a person, saying that he fought with a skill who may have dumped the body and drove off, but isn't forward with the car information.
It's pissing off Sipowitz.
Well, Simone's also getting slightly upset, because he's the one that goes, "End the car." Did you see what kind of car it was? And then the guy says, "Yeah, it's a like white Ford Taurus," and goes to get him the license plate number. And they said, "Well, did you get a look at the guy?" And he said, "No, but the moose got a good look." And Sipowitz says, "Well, since the moose took a beating, we'll hold off his interview for later."
That's a pretty good comeback.
When he goes to get the license plate, he says, "There's man's best friend, and there's man spending too much time with man's best friend."
There's a lot of, like, foreshadowing. Rewatching it, you know, and it is from the late 90s, early 2000s, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of foreshadowing in it of, like, trends that are happening that have turned into, like, things that... Like, you know, people and their dogs.
Yeah.
And people and their animals, and their, like, support animals and shit. Like, I wonder when, like, the writers were writing this, if they ever would have, like, guessed, like, support animals would be a thing. People would be trying to take, like, pigeons and peacocks on airplanes and shit.
And also, just that there's an entire generation of people our age that, like, don't want to have kids, but they'll dote on their dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I saw a picture that said, like, of, like, a proud dog grandparent, and it was a sticker on a car, and I was like, well, that's an interesting way to say, I'm okay with my kids not having children.
Or having a life, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was...
It's like, if you're putting that much thought into your dog, that's kind of weird.
Anyway, this leads to the theme music for NYPD Blue. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from the break, I just wanted to mention that the music from scene to scene, the very first one, has dogs barking in it, and I thought that was stupid.
Well, they had to. They have to include dogs, Kirk. We just had the whole opening scene with a dog.
But it was just, I don't know, it felt kind of stupid. Before we separate the investigations, the episode opens after the credits with Greg Medavoy bringing in balloons for Gina, who's back from her face cutting. And
did you seriously just call it a
face cutting.
Well, her face got cut, and then she healed.
There's so many other things you could have called it. Her assault, her mugging, her anything.
It was an attempted rape, and she got cut in the face, and then they did surgeries to make it as good as possible. But
as good as possible.
I mean, there's really no nice way to say it, but it's the fact of the matter.
Okay, so real conversation then.
Uh-huh.
Being the time that this show is, doesn't her scar look horrible now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It looks like really bad, like, makeup?
It's...
Or prosthetic or whatever?
Okay, I didn't understand the question. You mean, like, in the context of a television show, where someone has to have a scar, it looks bad?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't notice it that bad. I honestly thought everyone's making a way bigger deal out of this than I think was necessary. Like, we'll talk about it. They're mentioning it even into the next episode, where they're like, oh, what happened to her face? When it's like, look, man, people get scars all the time.
It is fucked up, but that's human nature. How many times, like, watching this I've been like, oh, I would never react like some of those people. But then I catch myself, like, reacting when, like, something's different, or there is, like, a scar or something, you know, crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Shit, it's just catches you off guard sometimes. Fucked up to say, but it's true.
All that to say, Gina's coming back. She's coming back to the desk. She's getting...
Yeah, and there goes fucking Greg taking it, like, to, like, the wrong level.
Well, he brings in a bunch of balloons, and Martinez is like, she didn't really want it to be super high key. So then, instead of just, like, taking the balloons somewhere, he starts popping them, which is like, why? You could take the balloons elsewhere, or, like, take them into a room.
Oh my god. I have written down on my phone, like, why pop them inside a police station?
Yeah, that seems like a terrible idea.
Go outside, go somewhere else. Why go do it somewhere where, like, fucking, it sounds like a gunshot? Like, be smarter than that. Like, Greg is an idiot.
Everybody's bringing in gifts for flowers and whatnot. There's a comment about how their messages look like shit.
That's Sipowicz's way of saying hello.
Glad you're back.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back.
Glad you're back, because the messages I've been getting lately look like hieroglyphics. Martinez mentions that Medavoy brought balloons, which I don't really understand. He's like, hey, she really wants to keep it low-key. And then she comes in, and then they're like, oh, at least they didn't run for cover. He's like, no, look. And he also says something. He says, no, these people, like, they're happy that you're here. Look at these gifts, token of their feelings. Which is a weird fucking phrase. And
yes, it is.
And then he says, oh, but Greg also brought balloons. You don't get to see them, because I told him to take them away. But he brought them. Which is like, what are you doing there, Martinez? He gets a DOA, him and Medavoy get a DOA in a mud lot next to some houses.
Oh, and the bitching from the beginning about the mud. From the beginning about the mud, and nonstop.
Because he couldn't...
just mud.
He couldn't find boots.
He couldn't find his fucking boots. Like a fucking... Ugh.
After they get the DOA and they're done talking to Gina, I guess we'll head with Simone and Sipowicz's... Sipowicz's, I don't know how you would do that. Their investigation.
Sipowicz's eye.
They believe that the DOA is Antoinette Todd, because there was a missing persons report filed and a stolen car report, or someone reported. Wow. Okay. My brain, it's dying. Someone reported their car stolen, who was her boyfriend, around the same time he filed the missing persons report, and it matches the car that the guy who owns the chop shop or junkyard saw speeding away. So they assume it's Antoinette Todd, but they haven't gotten an ID, and they're going to go after the boyfriend first.
They think he killed her and called in his, like, car being stolen to, like, make it look like he wouldn't be about it, you know?
But what's weird, and I don't know if you felt this, when they were talking to Fancy about it, they said, we're going to bring in the boyfriend. And he's like, well, what do you have on him? He's like, well, BCI is clean, but we figured we'd talk to him first. And then Fancy says, well, that's good for openers, but they didn't seem like they really thought it was him. They're just like, maybe we should go talk to him.
But doesn't Fancy make some kind of comment about how they need to look at the boyfriend first. Like, he's like the main substance. Because he says something like, you gotta like the boyfriend.
Well, I think he said, you gotta like the boyfriend. Because the quote was, you gotta like the boyfriend for openers. And it was like, but like, just the way he said it didn't seem like it's obviously him. It was more like, well, we gotta start with him and see where it goes.
Oh, yeah. He's telling them, like, this is all we got, so go with him.
So they bring in the boyfriend. His name, Tim Dolan. When he shows up, they bring him in, and they have a standard interrogation, I guess opening interrogation. And they say, hey, when's the last time?
He was acting a little weird in the beginning. Well, I felt like Tim Dolan was.
Yeah, he was like, have you heard anything about Antoinette? Did you hear anything about my car? And they ask... And
he's being very confrontational.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he thinks probably, like, okay, they have information, they're just not telling me. And then when they say, well, we have a female, we have a body that may be Antoinette, matches her description. And Sipowicz pulls out the Polaroids, and he basically breaks down.
Yeah, then they knew.
And he says that
then they knew it wasn't him.
Yeah, and he says there's this guy with Coke bottle glasses who was bothering her at her bar.
Why is it always got to be people who wear glasses?
Because people, you know, they're prejudiced against people who wear glasses. They think we're smart, and they think we're rapists.
Is that how all we can be?
I mean, yeah, that's as far as we can climb. Being really smart or being really racist. Racist? No, rapists.
No, and racist. I've noticed a lot of racists are visually challenged.
And that's got to be a terrible thing, to be a racist rapist. Sounds like a...
I mean, not really. Not if it's, like, something you like to do.
Okay.
No, like, if your thing is raping racists...
Oh, you're talking about a racist rapist. They only rape racists.
Yeah, yeah, that's the way I looked at it. Not a racist who rapes. I looked at it as, what are we talking about? But I looked at it, I looked at that statement as someone who rapes racists.
They only rape racists.
Uh-huh, yeah. Which, I mean, I'm not against, but...
I'm not against.
I mean, you still shouldn't do that.
It's, you know, rape and racist. It's like Pringles. Once you start...
Once you pop, you just can't stop, dude.
Sip and Simone check out the boyfriend's story, and it checks out. And the guy at the bar said there was somebody bothering her, but they never got a name. When they come back, there's a crackhead who tried to use the DOA's credit card.
Yes.
And his name was Monk. I can't remember. I didn't write down his first name. But it's a crackhead who swears he found
and
it.
He vaguely matches the description. He just doesn't have glasses. But he does have scraggly hair, and that was part of the description.
And he also...
And he's a white male. Like, he just didn't have glasses, which you can easily get rid of.
I found all...
And he has a rap sheet, sorry.
Yeah, he has a rap sheet for possession and lewdness.
Dickie waving, bitch.
Dickie waving, I wrote that down. Says here you took a caller for Dickie waving. And
when did peeing turn into Dickie waving?
I've learned from this episode they'll say things just to frustrate the person to see if they can get them to tell the truth. You see that a lot in a interrogation later.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to get this dude off of his game, thinking he's trying to lie about where he found the card. But he's clearly telling the truth that he saw a dude dump some stuff in a trash can and found the card in there.
He's just scared because he has a record and he's in the police station, you know? So he's freaking out a little bit.
He puts up the, I guess, Scout's honor sign when he said...
Yeah.
They're like, oh, will you make this go away? He's like, yeah, if you're telling the truth. And he's like, I swear, and throws up the sign. And Sipowicz says, oh, yeah, show us that sign. Now we're reassured.
Sipowicz is such a dick.
And
I always thought that was the read between the lines.
Oh, you no, that's if you face the back of your fingers towards them. But
isn't that what he did? Didn't he give him the back of his fingers?
No, he gave him the front of his fingers, almost like a Vulcan salute. But he did the...
Between the Lines! What movie is that from?
That's School of Rock.
Yes, that's right. Thank you.
Read Between the Lines, Theo. Read Between the Lines!
The Lines!
Sipowicz and Simone go to where the guy was talking about seeing that stuff get dumped. And they find the bag and they find a bloody flannel. And while they're looking through the effects, the guy who dumped them shows up off the bus. And Monk is like, that's him, that's the guy. He cut his hair. Yeah.
He cut his hair, though. You're right.
He cut his hair and shaved his head, but I remember those glasses. So they go to pick him up, and this dude who, he says his name is Mel Lentz. He's not a very big man, and he doesn't seem like a very athletic man.
No, not at all.
But he is, like, stopped by them, and then he obviously is agitated, and then he tries to run away. He tries to, like, push and juke Simone, which was, like, hilarious. Because I don't really know how far you think you're going to get from Simone.
I mean, if you push a man to act, you don't know what he could have been capable of.
And I think if he was running away from, like, Sipowicz and...
Medavoy
or Sipowicz and... Not a hint, but the... Not a reference, I guess a preview for next week, Catelli. If you were being stumped by them and you push one and start running, like, you might be able to get away from those guys.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, I mean, that you're right, that guy does not look like he has an athletic bone in his body. And the actor does a really good job of making him make that, like, face of, like, a nerd, or, like, what we deem as, like, a nerdy person. I don't know, I just really liked how the actor's choices.
Yeah, Mel Lentz, he did a great job. I think he kind of nailed this part. They bring him into the station, and he's claiming ignorance to everything. He doesn't know what they're talking about. I also wrote, it seems like they were making up witnesses to say that they saw him do things.
Yeah, that was really weird.
They said, oh no, we got a witness that says you were at the junkyard, we got a witness that says you dropped it, and we got a witness that says you were bothering her at the bar. Which is almost completely untrue. They have one of those witnesses, and he's not reliable because he's a crack addict. And Lentz is being very smug about the whole thing. And
yeah, he's being an asshole, and he's getting on my nerves.
And at one point, he scoffs after they... Because they do a lot of these, like, insults and these... Sipowicz and Simone, they do these comments and these insults to get him to, like, maybe say something they shouldn't have. And after Simone and Sipowicz go back and forth, he scoffs, and he brings out the inner Batman in Simone, because he was like, what was that noise? He's like, interesting, and then grabs him by the shirt. He's like, if you make that noise one more time, I'm going to break your nose so you make it every time you breathe.
Yeah, that was, I like the line, I like the, again, they do a really good job when it comes to writing these little, interrogations.
Mm-hmm. They do a great job.
I think, and they act them really well, too. I think that's really, really good.
When they put him in the pokey room, I guess, he's going to stay a while, and then they talk to Cohen. And while they're having lunch, they're talking to Cohen if they can get an indictment off of what they have, and he says no. When they give some smart-ass remarks, Cohen says, it's this thing called, like, undeniable evidence. And then Sipowicz asks, can you at least get us a warrant for his place? And he says, yeah, I might be able to dress it up nice for you. And Sipowicz says, how come with you, Cohen, it comes out like the principal doing us a favor? And then Cohen responds, because the school is the Constitution, Sipowicz, and you're the class dunce.
Yeah, that was a pretty good dig.
I don't know about you, but every time Cohen speaks now, I just go, God, what did Kirkendall see in your ass?
True. Very true.
Why in the world did she go for you? Yeah, we'll get there eventually. The landlord for Mel, Mel's place, before they go in, he says there's a lot of sex noises, but he never sees any women coming in.
That is a random thing to tell people.
Hey, before you get in here, there's always a lot of sex noises.
Yeah, hey, to the people I don't know that well, this dude's moaning a lot.
And they go into his room. Well, they go into his apartment. It's really, really clean and organized. It's clear that if he did anything, he scrubbed the place. They find a little porn hideaway, which is to harken back to the 90s when you had to watch your porn on VHS.
And had to get it mailed to you?
And I don't know if you noticed this, but I wrote it down because each time I watched it, I noticed it. In his shrine to, like, three specific porn stars... On one of them, there's a picture of the porn star, and then right next to that picture is the same picture, but just cropped.
Yes. Yes.
I was like, why the hell did they dress it that way? Why would this dude have the same picture of the same woman next to each other, but one of them's cropped?
No, yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
It was very weird.
It's a very interesting, like, maybe that's the only picture that they had of the girl, or that you could do, and they're like, y'all just fuck it. Zoom in and cut it. They won't be able to tell any different.
In the future, they won't be able to slow this down or pause it and see it, so they won't...
Yeah, we won't have HD TVs that can get, like, fucking everything.
So, they find a body bag in the alley behind his apartment, because he does have an entrance to the backyard. And there was some slats missing from the fence, and there was a body bag in the alleyway.
Body bag, wasn't that Ice-T's?
That was Body Count.
Body Count.
That was Body Count.
Better name. Better name, Ice-T. Good call.
Good call. There are blonde hairs in the bag, but they're not 100% sure if they're hers. When they bring
it back, the bag's not on his
property
either. That's a problem.
It's in the alleyway, so it's just circumstantial.
But hey, we're cops. We can look away from that.
Also, they could have just lied. Like, that's the other weird thing. They bring it back to the house and talk to Fancy. And he said that, well, it wasn't on this property. And we don't have proof that the blonde hairs were hers. And he says, well, we can't really link it to him, even if they come back hers. So then they go after the porn star angle that this woman kind of looks like the porn star on his wall. And while our good thinking and moral standing cops wouldn't do this, if they had just got in there and the landlord didn't see it, they could be like, hey, look, we found this in the backyard. And then who would say different? And then he would say, that was not in the backyard, that was in the alley. And be like, well, how do you know that was in the alley? And why are you trying to say it wasn't? Like, they could have just straight up lied about it, all four of them. But,
yeah, there could have been a better way of going about it. A way better way. I agree with that, for sure.
They, go back at Mel, and they bring the porn tapes, and, there's some lines in this last interrogation I really liked. The first thing, like, Sipowicz really says to him was, first we put a moratorium on the I didn't do nothing, because that pisses my partner off, and all of us know it's crap. And then the guy says, I don't know what you're talking about. And Sipowicz says, that's the first cousin of I didn't do anything, and it's going to get you struck.
Yeah.
And this Mel character holds his ground, and I kind of thought it was almost like a new Webster situation, even though the Webster was like a serial killer, and it was way more intense, and the guy playing him was way more intense. I felt they could have stretched this out if the guy held his guns a little longer.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like, they could have turned him into, like, a recurring character.
Yeah, and if, like...
He could have come back, like, maybe in, like, two or three episodes, and another woman that looks like one of the porn stars gets killed or something.
He
fantasized about three, right?
Yeah, there were three different ones on the wall.
Like, they could bring him back, like, maybe the next week, one of the girl that dies looks like... another girl, like the blonde girl or something, you know?
And since they really...
Or the brunette, I mean.
Yeah, and since they really didn't have anything that could hold him...
Yeah.
It could have been one of those episodes where it was like, oh, well, I guess the bad guy gets away because he was just good enough and we just didn't have the right stuff. But then down the line...
Oh, yeah, well, that's the other thing is they didn't have anything to hold him, yet he, like, couldn't go... He wouldn't go anywhere.
The way they get him to confess to this... is Sipowicz starts just making fun of him, really.
Yeah, he belittles him the whole time.
He says he's got a tiny dick, says he's half gay. I don't even... Like, that part was weird, because he's like... He keeps saying, I'm perfectly normal, and he's like, this half-dicked... What did he say? Half-dick, half-blind geek with a... Or this half-blind geek with a midget pecker... And then he's like, why don't we all pull out our normal Johnsons? This guy's half a fag. And starts, like, screaming at him. And you're like,
well,
what the fuck?
Guy says, do you want to see it?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because Sipowicz keeps talking about, like, how small his dick is. And so finally the guy's like, oh, yeah, you want to see it? And then Sipowicz says something like, oh, look at this guy. He's half a fag. That was intense.
Yeah, that was a little fucked up. He gets Mel so flustered that he admits to talking to the woman, and then admits that she maced him when he tried to talk to her on the street.
Yeah, weird that, like, you know, you awkwardly follow this woman, you try to talk to her, she may mace you. Awkward.
And he gets more and more flustered and upset until he essentially screams, "I want to write it how I want to, not the way he's saying." And then they convince him that he's allowed to tell them how it happened. That makes him look good, rather than the way Sipowicz will say it, which makes him look like a geek. And I don't... Like, he seemed like a pretty smart dude up until that point.
Yeah, he seems like he has it together, and then he loses it. But maybe that's why he could never be another Webster, you know what I mean?
Because, yeah, they just make fun of him just enough that he's like, "I want to write it how it happened! I want to write it how I say!" And it's like, okay, well, now you've just admitted to rape and murder, so...
Yeah.
It's going to be kind of hard to get out of charges, dude. But... Before I go into the Medavoy and Martinez story, after that, because it's Gina's first day and it ends, and she talks to Martinez one more time, and she's like, "Oh, I guess I'm just happy that the first day is over." He's like, "Yeah," and what did he say? It's so weird. But he says, "I got specific plans of carrying through with that this evening," implying all the good feelings.
Yeah.
And it's like, can you just not say something in a weird way?
Yeah, it's like he doesn't know how to construct a sentence.
Like a normal sentence. Because the gist of that is, hey, you had a good day, and I'm going to make it better because I'm going to fuck you later. And instead of just saying something, like, decent...
Well, maybe he wasn't even going to do that. Maybe he was just going to, like... take her to her favorite place to eat, or make her favorite food, you know? Maybe it wasn't even that.
Alright.
I mean, he's probably gonna get it in, but...
The Medavoy and Martinez story. DOA in a mud lot. It's a guy with his head smashed in. His name's Sig Johnson.
Siggy!
His wife said that the last time he saw him was last night, going to talk to a guy named Stimpy Powell, because he sold him a shitty air conditioning unit, and he just didn't come back home.
Imagine if your nickname was Stimpy.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
You know, that's pretty shitty.
It's a shitty name. There's one comment that I didn't feel like writing down
if you didn't feel like writing it down, then whatever.
Because it's just Medavoy being annoying. Because the neighbor woman is with the DOA's wife, Carol Buono, or Bono, and she's being consoling after she tells the story of what happened with Stimpy. She's like, "I'll go get his information." And the detectives go, "Hey, did you hear any yelling or screaming or any arguments?" And she gets super tight, and it's obviously suspicious, but they don't really chase it down because they got Stimpy. She says, "Oh, you know, maybe it's the weather. Maybe people got upset." And then as they walk away, Martinez says, "The heat makes people angry and fight each other, not wet and rain and cold." Yeah. And Medavoy says something to the effect of, "Yeah, that's why there's the northern territories have so much efficiency." Martinez kind of gives him a look like, "What does that mean? Like the people near the equator don't get anything done?"
you looked at it that way. That's interesting.
Because the way Martinez looked up and looked at it was kind of like, "What? Like you're fucking." Nordic mountain people are better
brown
than...
Brown people can't get shit done?
It definitely seemed awkward, like, just the way he said that. Martinez's look.
That's very funny.
Especially...
Look at it that way. I just looked at it as something stupid that Martinez has said again.
Or you mean Medavoy has said again.
Medavoy. Martinez has stupid shit, too. They're both in the same... boat.
Martinez, or Medavoy, also complained about the boots when they got to the dirt lot, where he's like, "Damn it, yeah, I lost my boots."
Yeah, because that's all he was, like, born to do was bitch.
They bring in Stimpy. Stimpy says that Sig came over just to kick his ass, and then left, and he went to go see his girlfriend. so he couldn't have killed him. And I,
Famous Face, she was in Twin Peaks, his girlfriend.
Millie.
Uh-huh. And she was also in an earlier episode, I think.
I was going to save the Famous Faces for the end of the show because from what I could tell, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are 5.
Oh, well, that's some information you should tell me before we start.
It's true. I should have. But
so I'm not flying blind on this expedition.
Also, Stimpy Powell, I thought he did a really good job. Like, for being an actor that's in there for, like, one scene, or one and a half scenes, he did a pretty good job of being, like, this, like, asshole swindler guy. And then when he gives Millie as his alibi, he says, "I was with her, so don't take her word for it. Take mine."
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the opposite of an alibi. They bring in Millie, who is a prostitute.
Yeah.
A sex worker.
You say that like you're above that.
No, I'm just... I didn't try to say it like I was above it. I just tried to say it as nicely as possible. She is a sex worker. She is in the sex industry.
She is a sex worker. It was just funny the way you said that.
She's also doing a great job. She's killing it as like a, you know, down on her luck sex worker who they say was somebody with you last night, and she's being very obstinate. And then they're like, "Look, it's about a murder. We need to know if you were with somebody." And she's like, "Oh, Stimpy murdered somebody?"
Yeah, she knows exactly what they're looking for.
And then she says, "If it helps him, no, he wasn't there." Which is like, okay, so he was there. In the middle of talking to her, when she establishes, "Yeah, he was there, but he stole all my CDs like a dick."
Cassettes, yeah. Back when, you know, cassettes were a thing.
No, it was compact discs, because she says the whole...
Oh, did she say CDs?
Because she says the whole phrase compact discs. Because I remember thinking that was really weird.
I thought she said cassettes, because they made me think for like 20 minutes... When's the last time I saw a cassette tape?
I've seen cassette tape phone cases, but I haven't seen cassette tapes.
Like the last memory I have of a cassette tape is in our dad's old truck, you know?
Yeah, been a long time since I've seen one. They get pulled into Fancy's office in the middle of talking to Millie when she shouts, "He'll be what's left after nuclear war." Fancy lets him know, "Oh, you gotta re-canvas because they found a bloody typewriter in the dumpster." They then go back to Millie and they say, "Well, do you want to press charges against Stimpy?" And she goes, "Nah, let the free food go to somebody who deserves it."
That's a good little comeback.
And as she walks out, they go, "Has Stimpy ever had a typewriter, to your knowledge?" And she says, "Yeah, he writes back and forth with all the presidents.
He's even got a fax machine.
He talks to Clinton all the time."
It's funny. She does a really good job acting because I feel like I've seen or heard that person on the street before.
Yeah. She does.
You know what I mean?
And she's a famous face. She's been in a little bit of everything and she's killed it all the time.
Yeah.
Like she's always murdered it. Medavoy and Martinez re-canvas and they go to the different apartments and they go to Mr. Buono's apartment, the neighbor of Sig Johnson and his wife.
Uh-huh.
And Frank Bono shows up while they're canvassing, and they see a note on the door that says, "Frank, I'm hanging out with..." I can't believe I didn't write down her name. "Hanging out with Sig's wife," because she's obviously mourning and whatnot. And Frank Buono's a little bit... He's acting a little weird.
He's kind of like, right? He's acting a little skittish.
And he keeps saying, like, "I'd rather talk to my wife. I don't know what's going on." They got a tip from the landlord that his wife, Carol Bono, was on the stoop knocking off her boots at 4 in the morning. So they ask him, like, "Oh, was your wife out walking early for some reason?" And he's like, "No, she was with me all day until I got up." He's like, "Well, then why is the landlord saying that she was walking off her boots at 4 in the morning?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't really have an answer for that." So then they play nice and say, "How about we go down to the station house then? And I'll bring your wife. You guys can talk to you guys about it." And
he goes. He reluctantly goes.
Yeah, and the next scene, Martinez... Well, the next scene with these characters. Martinez is talking to Carol Bono. She's asking about lawyers, and she's like, I just don't want anybody to get hurt. And one of the funniest scenes that's unintentionally funny, at least to me.
Okay.
Martinez stands up while talking to her, goes over to something covered up by a jacket, lifts up the jacket, and it's a typewriter, and she starts, like, bawling her eyes out. Like, oh my gosh, they found it. And then Martinez, just the way he says the phrase, what can you tell me about this typewriter? Like, it's almost like that would be a short video on Instagram that's really funny. Because it's just like, woman breaking down crying at the sight of a typewriter, and then the guy going, so what can you tell me about this typewriter? I don't know.
It was pretty funny, because it's like he has no reaction to it.
Well,
it was hilarious.
And then she starts saying, God forgive us. So he sits down and says, who's the us when you say God forgive us?
Yeah, like, she's already ratting.
Medavoy is talking to Frank, and Frank says, when can I see my wife? And he says, I'm not sure, Frank. And then he says, well, I'm really uncomfortable talking to you until I speak to her. And he's like, yeah, I can understand that. And then Martinez rolls in with the bloody typewriter. And
so are we meant to believe that they're just wheeling this evidence around the station?
Well, they're not even wheeling it. He's holding it. He's carrying it in a bag from one place to the other.
That's interesting.
They get Frank to admit what happened by saying that they're going to go after the wife. Because she was up at 4 in the morning, and there's no reason.
And he's a loyal man, he can't go after his wife.
He admits to what's going on after getting the word that they won't go after his wife. So then he says, and his story is interesting, because he says, I lost control because she's been typing, and there's no meal, there hasn't been a meal for a week, and she doesn't even look up to say hi to me when I come in. So they said, so you threw it out the window. And he goes, no, I threw it off the roof.
Yeah, we don't have a window.
I didn't know he was dead until she called me this afternoon. She went to go see if it was banged up too bad, and it turns out it killed Sig. So then she threw it in the dumpster and came back in the apartment. Now, the only thing about this story that I find funny is... He says, I lost control, so I threw it off the roof. That means he grabbed the typewriter, which is a heavy typewriter. He was so pissed off, he charged out of his apartment, up some stairs, threw a door to the roof, and then threw it off the roof. And at no point thought to himself, okay, maybe this is too far.
I'm with you. what I'm trying to understand is like, I know it's like the 90s, but typewriters aren't that fun. Like, why is his wife on this typewriter for so long?
Maybe
you know
she's,
what I mean?
She's got the writing bug and blogs don't exist yet.
It's just so weird to me.
I love, like, I lost control. So I took that typewriter, I left the apartment, I walked up to the roof and threw it off. When it's not like, I think, maybe I'm a more evolved human being, maybe I'm not. But if I was in a rage about something like that, and I picked up a typewriter, I think I would get to the stairs before going, I'm not going to throw this off the roof.
Yeah.
Like, what am I thinking? If it was a window... If it was a window, you're just like, boop, toss. Oh my god, I threw it out the window. But to go
also,
up to the roof...
Why wouldn't you just, like, pick it up and just, like, throw it into the ground or something?
No, yeah, that's right, he could have just slammed it into the ground.
Yeah,
or just tossed it away.
Like, I don't know, there's so many other... He could have walked it to the dumpster.
But no, he just... Yeah.
Slammed it into the dumpster. He could have slammed it in so many spots.
So those two cases are done. One thing that happened in the middle and towards the end, Henry Caulfield shows up. Familiar character.
Yeah.
Simone owns a building now, And the guy who is taking care of the maintenance is a guy named Henry Caulfield, who is a dick. And he's calling about a dispute because a woman who pays like $100 a month on a rent-controlled apartment wants it repainted. So he's paying Henry to do it, and now the old woman has him running other errands. So he's upset.
Yeah, but the bigger conflict is she's mean.
Yeah, that's like, the problem. She's mean.
That's what it comes down to. She's mean and hurts his feelings, and he doesn't like it. That's what it really comes down to. It's kind of funny.
He shows up in the middle of the episode, actually when they're dealing with that crackhead Mr. Monk. Henry is going back and forth with Simone where he's like, okay, just tell her what you will and won't do. And then he's like just flamboyant and like, oh, you don't understand. It's like horrible. It's torture with this woman. And she smells and the place is terrible and she's mean and she's not appreciative. And then he's like, fine, we'll sit down with her. We'll talk about what you will and won't do. And he's like, and you'll be there? He's like, yeah, I'll try and find some time after work. And then Henry Caulfield says, what happened to that phone girl? It looks like someone took a chisel to her face.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
Which is like, hey, dude, you could have just asked what happened.
And what's weird, is like, he didn't really try to whisper it.
No, not at all.
Not anywhere close.
And Simone, like, grabs him by the shirt and says, like, tells him, yeah, it was attempted rape, and he cut her. Don't say anything as you walk out. And then he said, oh, thanks. I was gonna point and laugh. And it's like, no, Dick, you just shouted it in the middle of the room she's in.
Right?
You
like
idiot.
100%.
Like,
it's like, yeah. It's a dildo.
Yeah. The end of the episode, before Simone goes to this meeting, he has a little catch-up time with Russell. And she talks about counseling and whatnot. And something I noticed in the scene, which bothered me, because I noticed these weird things. He locks both the doors, which is something they do when they have to have a conversation in the bathroom and locker room. And then he has the conversation, and he only unlocks one of the doors.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
So I was like, that'd be a dick move if someone comes in from the office. Because then the door's locked, and they might think, oh, something's going on, but they don't go to the other door, and then they have to pee. It's just inconsiderate, Simone.
That's the weirdest fucking thing to notice, man.
But Russell...
How about they lock the doors because Simone was trying to put his dick in her?
Well, no, see, she was trying to let him put his dick in her, and he's the one that called it off.
Which is such a bitch move, because... he fucking locks the doors and is trying to be all fucking like, hey, like, I'm locking the doors and, like, we're speaking, we're flirting with each other and shit. And then he, like, comes up behind her and holds her, like, trying to, like, put it in her butt. And,
yeah, that's what's happening.
And then he's like, nah, never mind. Like, she's always DTF and he's always like, nah, I'm good.
Well, it's clear that, in my mind... I didn't think he was doing that. I thought he was trying to have a private conversation with her. And then she was like, I've been told by my counselor to give in to my instincts, which includes banging you in the shower right now. And he says, well, maybe we should try and stay employed. And she says, well, that's one way to stay dry. And it was like, oh, shit. But this is important for the scene afterwards. Because he's like, look, I better go. We better keep our jobs. I got to go to this meeting. And she's like, oh, a couple hours? And he says, if it's more than a couple hours, bring your gun. And he goes down to the building with Henry to talk to Edith, the old woman who has nothing positive to say about any of Henry's work. And it's quite literally Simone in a situation where two of the most annoying types of people are arguing... and he can't get them to just calm the fuck down.
Yeah, it was like Simone was caught in a bad improv. You know what I mean? Like it really felt like, oh no, not a bad improv. I'm sorry, but it felt like if these like it's like three friends were like writing a scene together, and like two friends just overpower it the whole time because Simone like only says like six words. everything else is, like, these two people, like, bitching at each other over, like, the weirdest things.
And it does end with... Because it's essentially him, like, Simone going, okay, what's the problem? And she's like, well, the painting's bad. He's like, okay, well, I mean, he's doing his best. I'm paying him to do it. He'll get it done. And then he says, and she makes fun of me the whole time, and she wants me to do this and this. And he's like, okay, well, you agreed to look out for the postman because her thing broke. He's like, yeah, he broke it. He's like, no, he didn't. He's just trying to make sure everything works out. And then it essentially ends with her going, look, I appreciate you doing the work and your company. Which was like, this has been 2 minutes of screaming for no reason. And I think everyone does a great job in terms of acting, because I really hated the conversation. And it ends... Yeah,
it was pretty annoying.
It ends with her going, well, my arthritis isn't too bad, so how about some tea? And Simone is too nice to say no. And as he sits down, Henry says her tea stinks. And Simone gives a look around that I only understood as, I could be fucking Russell right now, but instead I gotta have this damn tea.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like, what the fuck is my life that I gotta drink this tea with these two dumbasses? All they're gonna do is argue with each other.
Even though we've already fixed the problem, and I already agreed to use my Thursday to come here and help paint. So now I've ruined my Thursday, and now I'm ruining my post-work fuck sesh. Because I was going to get some spaghetti and meatballs and then some Russell a la carte, but now ain't happening.
Didn't you also find it weird that in their conversation, Russell and Simone, Russell says something to him like, oh, I hate talking to you about how I feel.
Oh, I hate talking to you about the counseling stuff, the family problems.
Yeah, like, she basically says, like, I hate talking to you about my life and my feelings. You know what I mean? Like, isn't that weird to say?
Well, she said that she doesn't want that to be the only thing they talk about, which Simone was like, yeah, you've only talked about it for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird that she doesn't want to talk to him about this shit. It's just a weird dynamic.
The episode ends with that moment with Edith and Henry. I wanted to do all the famous faces at once, because there's a whole bunch of them. Gentleman who threw the typewriter, Frank Bono. He's a...
Donna's dad, baby!
Donna's dad from That 70s Show. He was also in earlier episodes of NYPD Blue, I believe season one.
What was he in season one?
Wasn't he the private investigator that Sipowicz was pissed off at, because he was lying?
Yeah, you're right.
Carol Buono, his wife, was played by Donna Pescow, who has been in The Sopranos, Saturday Night Fever, and I know her as the mother from Even Stevens.
That was Even Stevens, I couldn't remember her from.
Henry Caulfield, who's recurring on the show already, is played by Willie Garson, who was in Sex and the City, White Collar, Hawaii 5-0, a bunch of shit, as well as Jackass number 2.
Doesn't he tase his nuts?
Yes. They fuck around with him, and they play, I believe, Taser Hot Potato.
That's right, Taser Hot Potato.
Millie Banks has a ton of credits, but that was played by Grace Zabriskie, who was on Twin Peaks. She was on episodes of NYPD Blue before this one. She was on Seinfeld. And she was in Armageddon. Armageddon is her most well-known for, which is very weird, because I don't even remember what she was in Armageddon.
Yeah, I don't remember what she was in Armageddon either. She had to have been someone's mom.
Yeah, I think so. Or, like, somebody related to, I feel like she'd be related in some way to, Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, I was gonna say, somehow Buscemi's character fucked with her or something. Or she's the mom of the really fat dude, do you remember?
Yeah. Yes,
the
I do.
The one who's getting tattoos and shit.
Mel Lentz and Jeremy Monk. I think I recognized their faces, but Mel Lentz was basically a character without a name in Con Air and Gone in 60 Seconds, which is probably why I recognize his face.
Of course.
Jeremy Monk, who was the crackhead, was played by Paul Hewitt, who I thought I recognized him, and I didn't see him in anything, but they were all about The Shield when I look in his IMDb, and that's another cop show, so maybe if you're Shield fans. But the woman who played Edith Murphy, this is kind of the surprising one. Edith Murphy was played by Maxine Stewart. She did a shit ton of movies back in the day. She died in 2013 at 94.
Oh, shit.
But the thing that she was that blows my mind, she was the voice in the Twilight Zone Eye of the Beholder, the episode with the woman who has bandages on her face.
Okay.
She was the woman with bandages on her face. One of the most iconic episodes of Twilight Zone, which I mentioned because Twilight Zone is the shit.
So iconic, Kirk. I had no idea what episode you were talking about.
Look, man, some of us are watching Twilight Zone and others are watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So
I'm not watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Anyway,
I'm watching The Sopranos.
Anyway, is there anything else you'd like to talk about on this episode?
No, not really. It's a good episode. It's not a whole lot of Diane Russell and Bobby Simone bullshit, so it's good.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of through lines with the characters' personal lives, which was pretty sweet.
Yeah, not a lot of personal stuff in this one.
One thing I forgot to mention, which might be nothing, one of the porn stars that they mention to Mel Lentz, her name was Chantelle Marmont, and I don't know if that's a reference to the Chateau Marmont, which is, I believe, a hotel in L.A., but I thought that was interesting. Could just be speculation, but it could be a fact that's based on the Chateau Marmont.
I don't think it has anything to do with it. Do you have a bunch of straws on your desk? Because it feels like you're grasping at them.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. We're on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram's Asher Brothers Podcast. That's Instagram. Twitter is Asher Bros Pod. Have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls real quick, because I forgot to mention them and credit them correctly. Frank Buono was played by Don Stark, and Mel Lentz was played by Scott Burkholder. I'm sure they are now pleased that I've given them their proper credits. If you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, you could always check out An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall on Amazon. You could check out True Blue, written by a creator and a consultant about the first couple seasons. And you could also check out What Would Sip Do, a collection of articles and opinions about the show written by people from all walks of life. If you need NYPD Blue the show, you could always check out Hulu and Amazon. They are both streaming the whole show. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the show wherever you're listening to it. It's how it gets seen by other people, and hopefully more people listen to the show, and more importantly, watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Thanks again. Keep watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls.